This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We may have to face trauma, and we are facing traumas. We may have to face more trauma in order to get there. But the soft landing comes if we reorient ourselves to how do we be good ancestors for future generations? How do we be good stewards of this incredible thing called life on Earth that we've been given? So that's the moral and ethical aspect. It's our job to look after the future.
Are people's investment and buying decisions fueled by beneficence, or are they simply selfish acts? This week's guest on Sea Change Radio, Joel Solomon, believes that the future of our economic well-being hinges upon our ability to recognize, develop, and reward inherent altruism. We discuss Solomon's new book, The Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism, including a view of current markets and Solomon's vision for 2050. Then we dig into the Sea Change Radio archives and listen to an interview with an anonymous engineer who's worked in the Russian gold mining industry. He shares his experiences and talks about mining industry practices and sustainability efforts. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Joel Solomon. He is a mission venture capitalist. His new book is called The Clean Money Revolution. Joel, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So first, what is a mission venture capitalist?
That's our best way to demonstrate a difference from traditional venture capital. And that difference is that first is about the mission of the company and is it going to do something that's constructive to the future well-being of people and places. And so we're similar to other early growth stage investors, but our focus is on organic food, organic skincare, and environmental technologies, which inherently puts us into sectors that both are helping make the world better in one way or another, and secondly, which are in large growth and a lot of demand right now, so we can do a good job making money for our investors while we invest that way.
Now, I want to dive into all the forms of green investing in a second. They go by lots of different names, from SRI to ESG to impact investing. But first, explain to us how the U.S. stock market just keeps going up and up in the face of some real tumultuous times. Why is Wall Street responding like having Donald Trump as our president is business as usual?
Well, first I'll say I've been privileged not to have to go into the stock market because I'm a private investor in private companies as well as with real estate and other things. I'm able to be an entrepreneur. So that was a choice I made a long time ago. However, I get affected by it and everybody else does. How this is happening right now looks like insanity to me. There are all kinds of reasons that it shouldn't, and there are all kinds of reasons to be very concerned about the future of the economy. Seems like we're on the edge of a very big bubble. And it's the time, of course, when people then want to buy. It's just like housing prices. Everybody feels it's an endless gold rush and they should get in. So I'm very nervous about the next crash and what it does in combination with where the world has gone on climate and equity and all kinds of issues that put us in a very tenuous place right now is my point of view.
So with that in mind, there's going to be a lot of money coming out of the market and into other places. And part of your thesis in Clean Money Revolution is that with the baby boomers passing away, there will be $50 trillion worth of wealth being passed on to millennials. What do you see their mandate being? And what is the vision that an impact investor like yourself is trying to set forth how this next generation should invest its money?
Yes, they're all getting much wealthier in the future right now if the markets and real estate and all that hold. The hope is, and we have to have some hope, that millennials have grown up in an era where technology and information has become much, much more accessible. So there's more transparency and insight into what's going on. If you purchase, like, you take your cell phone. I love my cell phone. It's attached to my body, basically. I almost want to sleep with it. Can't help it. What's it made of? Some of the things that go into making that cell phone are doing severe damage, heavy-duty ecological damage, and severe damage to people. We don't think about that. We carry on. We get the next model. We know that where the waste of cell phone goes is also a kind of dramatic issue. Okay, well, we can look at that throughout society. I lived through an era where you didn't really have to think about or know those things when you bought something or when you invested in a company. However, we now can know more. So my premise is that, as happened to me in my younger years and then carried on to be my career, is that once you start to understand the other side of where the money that's sitting in your pocket or your credit card or your bank account or your stock fund, your mutual funds, your retirement funds, what that's actually doing to people and places, and you know that, and you start to see that there's alternatives. First, you get aggravated by the fact that you're actually participating in very damaging and destructive activities in order to do the natural thing, which is to take care of your family, look out for your old age, and send your kids to school and that kind of thing, which is a natural human instinct. But the result is you want something better if you can have it. And so with the rise of things like organic food movement, renewable energy, green buildings, you go through the entire economy and you're seeing these reforms, less wasteful, more efficient, more long-term, less damaging to people, less damaging to ecology. There's opportunity to make choices so that your money shifts from out-and-out damaging and destructive practices to hopefully at least softer, less damaging ones. But ideally now, we can actually turn around entire industries. And so we hope and we're counting on these next generations to be smarter than we have, at least better informed, and because of that, make better choices.
The full title of your book is Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism. I want to focus on the capitalism part of the title, if we will. We've had a lot of investor-oriented discussions on this program in the past, making the case that our world economies need to look at things through a different lens than just the endless pursuit of growth. Looking at things like the Global Happiness Index as a better barometer for collective success, rather than simply GDP. Why don't you outline your vision how purpose can influence the money markets of tomorrow? Do you see it as a form of true altruism? And how can altruism and self-interest or just plain selfishness be intertwined?
So we're at a point in history where altruism and selfishness need to intersect and can intersect. Because for starters, I'm selfish. I want my kids, not only my kids, but I really want the future to have a good life. And I'm going to feel pretty bad if I was part of the generation that brought it all down and set us on the wrong path. So the reason that selfishness can play into this and help drive the transformation is because we know more now. We've got, I was born, there were 3 billion people on the planet. There's already 7.5 billion in my lifetime. It's going to hit 10. We cannot keep doing things the way we have. Science, technology, human ingenuity are coming up with solutions. We do not have to burn fossil fuels in order to heat our homes and drive automobiles. We need fossil fuels for way more important things, and they need to last for thousands of years, not for 50 more years. With the built environment, we have some of the biggest impact on climate is happening from inefficiency in buildings. The rebuilding, or the putting in of insulation, the redoing of better windows and all this kind of thing to waste less energy, is a huge job creator, and it's a huge moneymaker, as are renewable energy, organic foods, better health care. All of these actually drive economy. So if we can get the right kind of political leadership together with the right informed public, we can actually steadily make choices that move us towards a cleaner, greener, more fair economy. And we have to.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined by Mission Venture capitalist Joel Solomon. You read about the moral or ethical call to action in your book. Can you give us an example?
Well, I think the role of global world religions was to give us some spiritual guidance and to help us understand the meaning of life. I think that's where they came from. We're confused. How do we get here? Who are the gods? You know, how does this all work? Well, they also have a reinvention to go through. And I think of something as simple as the golden rule. Am I with my money doing unto others as I would like to be done to? Not very often. So if I actually think this is a spiritual evolution, if not revolution, that's required, which we may have to face trauma, and we are facing traumas. We may have to face more trauma in order to get there. But the soft landing comes if we reorient ourselves to how do we be good ancestors for future generations? How do we be good stewards of this incredible thing called life on Earth that we've been given? So that's the moral and ethical aspect. It's our job to look after the future.
Joel, you write about the soft landing, a vision for 2050. It's a pretty hopeful vision. Why don't you summarize it for us?
So I did a fairly preposterous thing, and I did a one-page, $100 trillion vision for how we might have a soft landing. And it starts with about a dozen political principles like fair taxation, responsibility for externalities, life cycle responsibility for products and things that are created, fairness and equity across the landscape for the number of people that we've got. And then it goes into a very, very generalized $10 trillion for a series of things that might actually move us towards economic prosperity and the soft landing. Now, the point of that is not academic. It's about simply putting out a vision and challenging other people, smarter people, economists, young people that are thinking about these things, to actually map out globally how we might get a soft landing for civilization. Paul Hawkins' recent book, Drawdown, has done a very interesting job of researching what are the 100 key things that can be done that would actually shift the future of climate and its impact on humanity and the planet. Fascinatingly, the top topic is to support education and well-being of women and children on the planet. Now, why is that? Go get the book and read it. It's an important thing to think about and study. So we do have the capacity. There's enough money in the world to solve most of the problems. It is a matter of political will, personal will, and taking responsibility.
His book is Clean Money Revolution, Reinventing Power, Purpose, and Capitalism, Joel Solomon. Joel, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's been a pleasure.
I want to welcome to the show a very special guest, a mining executive who will remain anonymous for reasons we'll find out very shortly, Art Leo. Art, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
It's great to have you on the show. So first of all, you should probably explain to our listeners why you've chosen to remain anonymous for this interview.
I signed various non-disclosure agreements with the company, but I'm not speaking ill of the company. The company was actually fairly progressive in that, you know, field. Definitely they did their best to lessen the impact of their activities and give back to the community, so on and so forth, maybe some so-called greenwashing. But nonetheless, the activity itself is such an energy demanding activity that is really very difficult to lessen the impact completely. And if you consider the fact that these precious metals are somewhat arbitrary in their value, it does seem kind of silly from an environmental perspective.
So when people get a gold ring
they usually don't think much about it. How has your experience in the extraction business changed your perspective on how you view precious metals?
Well, I guess traditionally you just take it for granted that gold has always been used as a thing of value. I mean, until 40 years ago or so, 45 years ago, it was really the basis of our monetary system. And as such, it's always been ascribed great value. But you don't really appreciate the amount of work, energy, and effort, and in some cases, environmental impact that goes into extracting it around the globe.
And let's talk about some of the places where precious metals are most commonly extracted. We hear about South Africa, but pretty much everywhere there are some sorts of metals being mined. Is that right?
Well, what has happened, Alex, is that obviously with gold's long history, all the easy deposits of gold are more or less mined out. That is, we've been prospecting for gold and other precious metals, silver, platinum, etc., for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And as technology has increased in power through all sorts of geology, advanced mining technologies, satellites now, all the easy to get gold is more or less mined. What we're left with are a lot of very remote locations in undeveloped countries for the most part, or developing countries.
Such as?
You know, South Africa traditionally, places in Africa, South America, Asia, Russia, China is obviously mining a lot. They're all around, but oftentimes they're in remote, environmentally sensitive areas.
You probably can't say exactly where you've worked, but why don't you give us kind of an overview of your experience in the industry?
Well, working in a remote location is very challenging. Most American citizens or expats as such will not live on site permanently. It's a rotation, whether it's a few weeks in, a few weeks off, or a month or two in, a month or two off. That is the general regime. So there's lots of transportation involved at high costs. Likewise, there's risk involved, being that transportation systems in these developing countries aren't nearly to the standards that we are used to in Western societies. In that regard, it was definitely very challenging and draining, both physically and emotionally, because you're away from your family and friends for extended periods of time.
When you say an extended period of time, how long are these stints generally?
Well, they vary. In my experience, it was anywhere from a 4-week stint to a 6-week, sometimes 8 weeks. It sort of depended on the needs of the company keeping continuous staff in a remote location. And then you would juggle around various national holidays in both countries and what other people's schedules were. So anywhere from, you know, a 4-week on to a 6-week on to a 8-week on with a 4 to 6 week off rotation.
And what is your specialty in the engineering field? Why don't you give our listeners a little bit of background on your education?
Yes, I have an undergraduate degree in hydrology, with the bulk of my professional experience for 10 years was in the design end of engineering. I also had about 5 years of very intense construction administration in a post-disaster situation that involved a great deal of project management and also quality assurance on mining operations, mainly sand as well as clays for various projects.
Can you tell us what metals you've worked in terms of extracting? And I'd also like to know about how it's done. Maybe you can walk our listeners through in terms of the supply chain on the mining end, at least.
Well, my experience at the mine I was at, the main precious metal was gold. But as often is the case with gold mines, there's a fair amount of silver found as well. So gold and silver were produced there. you know, essentially the process would go like this. There was an above ground mine that was mined initially, and then once that was exhausted, it switched to a below ground mode. Gold, as I said earlier, a lot of the easy to reach gold and other precious metals have already been mined. So the type of concentration at this mine was somewhere in the range of, you know, 15 grams of gold per metric ton, which seems like an incredibly small amount of gold per metric ton of rock. But in fact, that at the time, that was one of the richest gold mines in the world.
And your colleagues, I imagine, had other experiences working for different companies and different mines. Did you hear any practices that made you proud to work for the company you were working for? Or maybe you can kind of share some of the shop talk that you gleaned while working in this mine.
Absolutely. This as I said before, the company I did work for was progressive in its field. And in that they were always seeking the latest technologies to lessen the overall impact. As I was saying, they had to process one metric ton of rock to get 15 grams of precious metal, which is an incredibly large amount of rock to process for very little precious metal. As such, being a very, very remote location, it's completely impractical to ship the ore out, and the ore would need to be processed on site. Therefore, there was a mill on site in order to process and extract the metal out of the ore. Oftentimes, these processing regimes require a lot of dangerous chemicals and a great deal of energy and have some fairly hazardous waste. But this company nonetheless sought to optimize that process in terms of environmental impact.
So a metric ton into 15 grams, what does that look like, and what happens to those that metric ton which is removed? Where does it go?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, a metric ton is a lot of rock. It's a fair amount. And obviously, you take that 15 grams out, and there's basically a metric ton of waste after. This is what's known in the industry as tails. And what is done is the tails must be wasted. There's a fair amount of water needed in these processes to process the ore. Therefore, at my site, they had diverted a small stream and built a very large tailings dam. Therefore, the waste was not just discharged on the ground, but it was put in an artificial reservoir that was held up by a dam. And that was being filled with tails 24/7, 365 days a year. It's a lot of waste.
Rock on, Goldust woman. Take your silver spoon and dig your grave.
Heartless challenge, pick your path and I pray.
Did she make you cry, make you break down, shatter your love? Is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces and go home. Did she make you cry, make you break down, shatter your illusions of love? Tell me, is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces and go home.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Art Leo. He is an engineer and a mining expert, and because of his non-disclosure agreement, he is remaining not anonymous for this discussion. So, Art, you're a hydrologist by training, you said. Maybe you can explain how water plays a role in the waste that we were just discussing.
Well, as I was saying, it takes an incredible amount of water to extract 15 grams of precious metal from a metric ton of ore.
Sounds almost like fracking.
Yeah, it's an incredibly water-hungry process. In most cases, you're going to have a very large water demand just supporting your staff. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of people living there, working at the mine, and they come with all the commensurate demands that a small little town brings along with it.
But we're not just talking about human waste and bottled water. You're pumping lots and lots of water to actually help extract the minerals, right?
Exactly. In the milling process, there's a great deal of water that's used. You basically end up having to pulverize the ore and mix it in large vats with various chemicals and follow various processes to get the precious metals extracted. There's an incredible water demand, and all that waste has to go somewhere. And that is traditionally handled in a tailings dam. You can't just discharge it into a body of water. It's very destructive. So they usually build a dam and let it gather there. And historically, there have been problems with these dams. They're not always the best design, and they're not always the best constructed. In my case, I think the dam was quite well built. It was very robust.
And just to clarify, this is a dam that the company built in order to give its mining operation a steadier supply of water?
No, this is to hold the waste. The water source in my case was actually a lake fairly close by. But the dam is not to produce the water. It's a place for the waste to go to. Recently, there was a very large tailings dam that failed in Brazil, if you follow the news. So occasionally these dams failed. We have them failures in the United States. There was one in Tennessee with the coal waste, if you recall, a few years ago.
Sure.
And when these tailing dams fail, they send their waste rapidly downstream. And, you know, like with industry, typically they're going to probably do their best to build it. And then the problem is the company can go bankrupt later. Then who's going to maintain that dam? Because dams need maintenance through the years. I mean, you can get a lot of rain, you can get a lot of snow, weathering. Who's going to maintain these dams decades later? No telling.
Well, I really appreciate you coming onto the show to share with us what you know about mining for precious metals, and I hope this doesn't get you into any trouble. Art Leo, thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by O'Donnell Levy, Pete Townsend, and Warren Haynes.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.